Well, that's the first portrait of Jesus I wanted to present for your reflection tonight, the leper. And the aspect of love that I wanted to put before you is the aspect of compassion. Let's take another scene and move into a different colour, a different feeling. This is from Mark chapter 3, verse 1 to 6. And I'll read it to you, and again, if you'd like to contemplate it and look for the love there. It reads like this. Jesus went again into a synagogue, and there was a man there who had a withered hand. And they were watching him to see if he'd cure him on the Sabbath day, hoping for something to use against him. He said to the man with a withered hand, "Stand up out in the middle." And he said to them, "Is it against the law on the Sabbath day to do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill?" But they said nothing. Then, grieved to find them so obstinate, Jesus looked angrily round at them and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." And he stretched it out, and his hand was better. The Pharisees went out, at once began to plot with the Herodians against him, discussing how to destroy him. In that scene, we see compassion again for the man with a withered hand. We see a feeling of wanting to give life to this man. That I'll leave for your own reflection later. The point I want to talk about here is that other important quality of love, which doesn't allow things to destroy the communion of love, where things matter, where it's not a soft, "I'm okay, you're okay, you do your own thing and I'll do my thing" kind of attitude to love. Love cares. Love is life-giving, and where life isn't there, love wants life to be there. And when something is going to break that communion, the lover is deeply moved. In fact, angry. Anger is a quality of love. It may not be. There are two types of anger. There's the anger where you lose your temper. There's the anger where you have lost something, where because of something that disturbs you, perhaps, or me, and my own kind of way of wanting things, I then lose my temper and I take it out on you. We're not talking about that kind of losing of temper. We're talking about anger, which is an overflow of love, which is an urgent and a powerful thing. And it's done in love, and it cares enough to not allow you to keep hurtling in a foolish direction, as those Pharisees were there at the end of many scenes that have built up to it. And Jesus cares about them enough to, the word like a two-edged sword, to pierce right through and give them no choice now, hopefully, as a last effort to kind of break through and shake them out of their stupidity, and not only their personal stupidity, but you'll find always the anger of Jesus, the words that he speaks so firmly. Please notice in the Gospel they're always spoken to the teachers, to the people who are trusted by others, to the people who are deceiving other people in the name of God, whether they want to or not, isn't the point. But they're the ones that Jesus' anger really reaches out to. On the one hand, to change them, yes. But even if they're not willing to change, he will not let them stay on the backs of the poor, does he? So he speaks with a beautiful quality, and without that quality, what we're talking about is not love, is it? If you don't love me enough to correct me, well, I might as well have a minty as your love, I suppose. It's hardly of much value to me. And if I don't love you enough to correct you, well, I've got to wait for a while. I hope I love you more, kind of thing. However, perhaps not however, but let us, as we recall this rather, and we all know what we're speaking of, but Please keep in mind Jesus' words in Matthew 11, 28 to 30, as we watch him in that scene there in the synagogue, turning angrily round at these people and accusing them of obstinacy because they're not interested in life at all, they're only interested in the law. They're only interested in the system when it suits them and when they're controlling it. They're not looking to see what the law is doing to people. They're not looking at the pain and at the lack of life. And he puts this whole thing before them. That same Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are overburdened, and I will give you rest." And he wasn't excluding the Pharisee from that. The Pharisees were perhaps the most overburdened of them all. Like poor old Paul, who was so well trained in the law that he had no room left in his head almost for metanoia, for a new vision. He was trapped in it, as I can be trapped in it and you can be trapped in it. These men were overburdened, but in his anger, it's always why we've got to watch him being angry. And always know that if his anger was turned against you or against me, and you looked in his eyes, you'd know that all you had to do was move towards him and he'd love you. But you had to move. And it must have been so hard not to. God, anyhow, come to me all you, and I will give you rest. Pilate, I'll give you rest. Judas, friend, I'll give you rest. Shoulder my yoke, learn from me, for I'm gentle. And only the gentle can be that angry without losing their temper. I'm humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls, for my yoke is good and my burden is light. All you who are thirsty, come. All who want it may have the water of life and have it free. Have it free. I'll take you now, if I may, through a third portrait and then we'll take a break. We've watched, as best I'm able to with you, the compassion of Jesus, and now we've looked at the zeal, the passionate zeal for life that was in his love. Another quality is brought out, or two qualities I'd like to dwell on now, with a third portrait, one you're very familiar with, let me read it, of that sinful woman who came to Jesus in Galilee, a woman whose name we don't know, but we often associate her, and we might as well, with Mary of Magdala. Though there's no indication that this is Mary of Magdala, but at any rate a person of similar profession. One of the Pharisees invited Jesus to a meal. Now let's watch the meal, eh? Imagine the meal would be not exactly on the floor, but on a very low kind of table, eh? And they would be lying down, resting on their, I've forgotten the right, I think, and then just eating, and so they'd be all round like that on cushions. And you'd be facing into the table, so your legs would be away from the table. So anyone could, on the outer circle, come by, and all they'd see is slippers are out there, and all these kind of legs, as it were, you know, and then they'd be all facing in towards the, on the divan, or whatever it was. So he's there, and he arrives at the Pharisee's house, and he took his place at table. Kicked his shoes off in the corner, came in and just kind of crouched down next to one of his mates and said, "G'day, Jack, how are you? I haven't seen you for weeks." He says, "Oh, g'day, Simon." And Simon says, "Good on you, Jesus, thanks for coming." That's terrific, because Jesus was a draw card, you know, so he had a few other people there. Okay. Now, a woman came in who had a bad name in the town, is the translation here. The Greek is simple, it's just hamartalos. Hamartia, we said, was sin. A lost woman, that's all it says, a lost woman. She'd heard he was dining with the Pharisee, and she'd brought with her an alabaster jar of ointment. And she waited behind him at his feet, weeping. And her tears fell on his feet. And she wiped them away with her hair. And then she covered his feet with kisses and anointed him with the ointment. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know what manner of woman that is who is touching him and what a bad name she has." Then Jesus took him up and said, "Simon, I have got something to say to you." "Speak, sir," was the reply. "There was once a creditor who had two men in his debt, Simon. One owed him 500 denarii. 500 days' wages. Work out what that is for your year. So a seventh of your year's wages. A lot of money. The other, 50. Nearly 2 months' wages anyhow. Oh, 500 denarii, I'm sorry, is a year and a third. Well, year and a half, my math wasn't too good. 50 is 50 days' wages for you. So they both owed a fair bit. They were unable to pay, and so he pardoned them both. Which would love him more? Oh, the one who was pardoned more, I suppose, said Simon, and Jesus says, you're right. He'd got off a year and 3 months and hard work to get the money back, and he's really delighted with the boss who let him off. Then he turned to the woman. Simon, he said, see this woman? I came into your house. You poured no water over my feet. She has poured out her tears over my feet and wiped them away with her hair. You didn't give me a kiss, Simon. She's been covering my feet with kisses ever since I came in. You didn't anoint my head with oil, Simon. She's anointed my feet with ointment. For this reason, I tell you, her sins, her many sins, must have been forgiven, or she would not have shown such great love. It's the one who's forgiven little who shows little love. And he turned to the woman and said, your sins are forgiven. Those who were with him at table began to say to themselves, who is this man? Who is Jesus? Who is this man that he even forgives sins? And he said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. And the compassion is there. The zeal is there. The determination, a more low-key one, but not to let Simon get away with it, or to get trapped in his stupidity, or to keep that awful judgment which Simon would then go out of the house and inflict on other people in God's name about what sin is and who the bad people are in the town and all the rest of the junk that he was going to go on with. Jesus wasn't going to allow that to continue as best he could. So lovingly and with an effort to reach Simon and break through his thoughts, he challenged him, confronted him, demanded that he face up to what was going on in that room. So we see that, but what I want to dwell with you on is the forgiveness there that we see. We see the forgiveness of Jesus very beautifully with Peter. I mean, it's all through the gospel of it. I just want to watch it in different places. Another quality of love that is essential to love, because we're not innocent people. If we were, then it'd be fine. You wouldn't need forgiveness. And if you just loved me while I was innocent, that'd be terrific. But it'd only last about 2 minutes. What are you going to do when I'm not? What are you going to do when I let you down? What are you going to do when I stray? What are you going to do when I get confused? What are you going to do when I don't know how to respond? What are you going to do when all the things that I'll do? And if you stop loving me as soon as I... We don't have to... What's Shakespeare? You know, love is not true love when it alters, when it alteration finds or something. Did we all learn that in school? But it's like a fixed star or something. Love of itself in its essence, and this is the quality we're watching here, love does not change when the object of the love changes. That's not what love is. It might, something else might go on, but that's not what love is. Love is creative of life. And when my love changes, it indicates a weakness in the love, of course. But the love of Jesus did not react to my situation, but healed. Stayed there for me. And so we find him with Peter. Simon, Simon, he says, Satan, this is at the Last Supper, Satan, you must know, has got his wish to sift you all like wheat. But I prayed for you, Simon, that your faith may not fail. And once you've recovered, you in your turn must strengthen your brother. Peter's, what a lovely act of fidelity and an act of forgiveness. Already before he's failed, he's been forgiven, hasn't he? He's saying, look, when you come back, you're going to be the one that'll help all the others, because they'll need you, mate, and I need you, so hang in there. I've prayed for you, and it's going to be really hard, but stay there for me, mate. And when you go, come back, won't you? Because they'll need you. And that's what happened. We're told later in Luke 22, when Peter had denied Jesus, that Jesus turned and looked straight at Peter, and the eyes that Jesus spoke in there are the same, reminding him, as it were, of what he'd seen. And he goes to one side of Peter, and he wept bitterly. John, in chapter 21, records what happened, the experience that Peter had after the death of Jesus. It kept going on and on and on, as forgiveness can. Jesus was dead now, gone in that sense, no longer able to be there with him, and yet you recall that scene on the lakeside where Peter experienced a forgiveness, a mission, a sense of renewal, a sense of being needed. Do you love me, Peter? Yes, he says, feed my lambs, feed my sheep. He was still being called to love, even though he'd made a mess of all that. And so he kind of experienced the critical gift of forgiveness. And John, in his scene after the resurrection, again reflecting on the experience of the community that had run away from Jesus and let him down at that time, John recalls the gift of the risen Christ, the Pentecost gift. The key gift of the resurrection was a gift of love, but not love like a simple word, but love like forgiveness love. It was a love that forgave. As the Father sent me, I'm sending you. And he breathed on them and said, receive the Holy Spirit. For those whose sins you forgive, they are forgiven. And he goes on, doesn't he, rather sadly to say, and if you don't forgive people, if you retain them in their sin, they're retained. So go ahead and forgive, please. Take my Spirit and learn to forgive. Because if you don't forgive, you'll never know a love which can keep giving. It'll dry up. This was seen to be so important in the early church that you'll find in Luke chapter 1, 77, for example, where in the Benedictus, as we read it, it goes, you will go, this is John the Baptist, his father, Zechariah, you will go before the Lord to prepare the way for him, to give his people knowledge of salvation. Knowledge that they've got meaning in their life, that they've got direction. And he goes on, why? Through forgiveness of their sins. Because having been lost, they'll know what it's like to be on the way. And that will give them, they'll know that they've got a possibility of salvation because forgiveness has been experienced by them. And he said, this forgiveness that they're experiencing, this forgiveness by the heart of mercy of our God, and the same word means compassion, by the heart of mercy of our God, who from on high will bring the rising sun to visit us, to give light to those who live in darkness and the shadow of death. That woman who was a sinner, the Mary of Magdala person, who was living in darkness and living in the shadow of death. The rising sun, Jesus, who kind of rose above the horizon, and she saw his face and saw a possibility of forgiveness that allowed her to dare that room, to go in whatever other people thought, and to try to grab hold of whatever it was there that was calling her, to guide our feet into the way of shalom, peace. And that's the peace. Go in faith. Your faith has healed you. Go in peace. The woman, everything came together again. She had a renewed sense of innocence, of life, touched stuff that she'd forgotten from a long time before because of the simple gesture and confidence and statement that Jesus made because of his love that did heal her, release her, forgive her.